faith, spiritual values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
Welcome, welcome. Glad you're with us. Hey, Logan, can you come plug in my computer so I can show them some graphics? Well, we've got a lot of news stories to cover with you today. I have just been studying late into the night and up early this morning, collecting the news stories. Remember on my worldview class I'm teaching on Sunday nights, I talk about the fact that most of the people see the world in bits and pieces and not as a big picture. Remember that? And, of course, my Sunday night worldview class will continue this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time at WVWTV.com, something I've been doing every Sunday night since about 2015. I mean, not every Sunday night, but pretty consistent since 2015. So I'm going through a series, Put Your Beliefs to the Test, based on a book I wrote years ago, but I've updated it, added a lot of information, and am showing the global worldview war that we're under, and the six dominant worldviews that rule the world, and how many of these worldviews, by the way, are merging. Communism and New Age has merged. As I said before, when you would say someone was a communist, that meant they were atheist, that meant they were a naturalist, that meant they were secular humanist. Today, now, what that means is you don't know. You have to ask if they say they're a communist. They could be a cosmic humanist like Al Gore, Mikhail Gorbachev. These are communists that are into New Age, green energy and the whole green movement and very much New Age. So a lot of the worldviews are merging. Christianity is merged with cosmic humanism, right? We see that, quote, Christian yoga and other things. We see this going on a lot, white magic now, bringing occultism to Christianity, the power of I am, your words are the power to create. Joel Osteen has taught this. I played the clip Sunday night. So we are in a worldview war, and most people don't understand the various worldviews and how they play together, nor do they understand the geopolitics of what's happening. I want to play for you in just a little bit about a 15-minute audio of a recording from this week's radio show from Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. As you guys know, he's a former CIA analyst and a brilliant military strategist and historian. And I want to play for you a new 15-minute clip from him on what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, and because this is really heating up, folks. Again, we've got to connect all the pieces. Now, of course, we look at this also through the lens of Bible prophecy. I do. And I'm thinking about that coalition of Ezekiel 38, Russia and Iran and Turkey and Syria. And you're looking at that and you're saying, here we got Iran threatening America. We got China threatening America. Did you know that today, folks? Did you know we've got in the last few hours, Iran threatening America? China threatening America? Of course, we got Russia willing to go to war. That's funny. Iran, Russia, that's part of the Gog Magog scenario. And then many believe from the east comes China. So we have to also look at this through the lens of the Bible and the Bible prophecy and say, is this setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled? We're not going to be dogmatic, but we're certainly be crazy enough to pay attention to it when nations are making military alliances that they haven't made in years, and they're practicing together. Iran, China, and Russia have all practiced together in military exercises, and we see them in the scriptures, and we see the hostility. Things are getting very interesting, are they not? Well, let's look at this first article. Let me go through a few articles. Here's one, the Wall Street Journal. Farms are failing as fertilizer prices drive up cost of food. I mentioned this to you the other day, but I'm bringing it back up. Farms are failing, says the Wall Street Journal, as fertilizer prices drive up cost of food. So you can expect to pay more at the grocery store for your groceries, right? But not only do we have the issue of that, look at this headline here. Russia is prepared to declare economic war on the West. How are they doing that? Well, one way they see that they're doing that is Russia, look at this. Russia just banned the export of ammonium nitrate for 2 months. The potential upside impact on fertilizer prices in Europe should be obvious. So should the fact that Russia clearly understands the geopolitical and geoeconomic pressure points that it controls, they can see the U.S. does not want to raise rates, but has to. They can also see that they can force inflation far higher, inflicting huge economic pain, even if they take some too. That is how economic wars work. Are we ready to fight one, or are we going to withdraw, going to redraw borders to avoid one? So Russia now is doing a ban on exports of ammonium nitrate for 2 months, and the potential is uptick in fertilizer prices in Europe. Well, we're already talking about that yesterday here. What is that going to do to fertilizer prices here? What is the supply and demand globally going to create? We already have a massive problem with food inflation. And that, of course, they've been lying to us forever. The real rate of inflation is not 4.5, 6, 7% even. The real rate of inflation, as I've been telling you guys for over a year, is between 11 and 15%, closer now to 15%. That means if you're not making a 15% return on your money, you're going backwards. You're losing money. This is why, of course, people traditionally invest in gold and silver, not to make money, but to be a hedge against inflation. They invest in other hard assets for the same reason. Houses, land, things that will keep up with the rate of inflation. So we already have food inflation. Look at this latest article. Construction costs spike 17.5%, worst since at least 1965. Inventories of new houses pile up highest since 2008. Median prices dives as mix shifts. So construction cost up 17.5%. Again, how long have I been beating that drum trying to warn my audience? I don't give financial advice, I give financial opinion, but trying to warn my audience about inflation, 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 inflation. Now, we not only have an economic war going on, as we've just been discussing, and there's also the war of those inside our country trying to steal the majority of the people's wealth through inflation and destroy the middle class, because you've got a bunch of Marxists and globalists running things, a bunch of Keynesian economics guys, John Maynard Keynes, who said the way we can steal the majority of the people's wealth is through a continuous process of inflation, and not one man in a million will know what we're doing. They're redistributing the wealth. They're redistributing the wealth. And you've got the Red Pope, Pope Francis, saying that taxation is another way to redistribute the wealth. Taxation. Well, why doesn't he redistribute his wealth? Because they sure got a lot, not to mention they've got walls around the Vatican. And I think if I went and studied this a few weeks ago, one reason there are walls around the Vatican was to keep the Muslims out. Did you guys know that? Go back and study when they built the walls around the Vatican. Because I read several weeks ago, it had to do with during the Crusades, if you will, and the Vatican stopping the Islamic invasion. Wow, that's funny. This Pope thinks walls are bad, open borders are great, while he is so wealthy, he doesn't redistribute his wealth, and he's got walls, which were originally built, I guess, for Islamophobia, if you want to play that game. Two can play that game. But look at this other headline. U.S. officer observed Israeli Air Force drill simulating attack on Iran. U.S. officer observed Israeli Air Force drill simulating attack on Iran. The operation and confidential drill took place about 2 weeks ago. Well, it's not confidential anymore now, is it? And involved dozens of aircraft. U.S. officer was allowed to participate as an observer in Israel Air Force drill in recent weeks that simulated an attack on Iran, KAN News reported Tuesday. According to the report, the fact that the Americans were allowed at sites they're normally not allowed in has a lot of importance, especially as it comes amid talks in Vienna to return to the nuclear deal between world powers and Iran. The training report included a number of scenarios, including aerial refueling, hitting a long-range target, and dealing with surface-to-air missiles. In mid-January, the Israeli Air Force pilots and the U.S. Air Force Central Command held a joint exercise called Desert Falcon. The exercise simulated airstrikes and dogfights. In December, KAN reported that the Israeli Defense Force was planning a massive mock strike aerial drill for this summer to prepare for a potential strike on Iran's nuclear program. Now, again, we look at this as people that understand the Bible, and the Bible speaking in Ezekiel 38, prophetically speaking about eventually Iran and Russia, a coalition of nations moving against Israel. Not saying that's this time, but certainly there's a lot of tension building here, isn't there? Now here's this. Look at this. This is from the Jewish News Syndicate. Iran pushes to increase ballistic missile range to cover Europe. Iran pushes to increase ballistic missile range to Europe. Through the recent engine test and the launch of satellites at the end of December, in the midst of nuclear negotiations, Tehran has made it clear that it does not intend to compromise on the issue of missile development. Well, how long before that missile development, folks, involves reaching America? And do we have someone in the White House and people in the State Department that are interested in surrendering America? Remember, we lost Vietnam because we wanted to lose Vietnam. We had people in our own government that were defending the policies that would guarantee we would lose to the communists in Vietnam. Same thing with North Korea. So don't think for 1 minute we don't have people in our government in the red-green axis that will do whatever they have to make sure that America, the great Satan, Israel, the little Satan, loses to the red-green axis. The red being the Marxist, the green being the Islamist, Iran. And who's in military alliance? Russia and Iran. And China. And they've had military drills together. So you got Iran pushes to increase ballistic missile range to cover Europe. While, by the way, Iran's threatening America if we don't prosecute Trump for killing the Iranian general Soleimani, they're threatening attacks on our homeland. Well, that's interesting. They're threatening attacks on our homeland. Put a pin in that. I'll come back to that in a minute. Here's another headline. Chinese ambassador says war likely with U.S. if Taiwan continues toward independence. Well, how many of you think we can get involved in a war in Russia and a war with Iran and help Israel and a war with China? You think we can fight a three-front war fighting Iran, fighting Russia, and fighting China? And that's interesting. Now, they're all three in military alliance together. Huh! You think that maybe what they're doing here is going to put us over a barrel where they basically can just get us to do whatever they want because they realize we can't fight a two-front war, much less a three-front war? And no telling how many terror cells that Hezbollah, Iran, has here in America, right? I'll get to that. Like I said, put a pin in that. And then we have so much of our government and reportedly Fauci and our military industrial complex working with China. Much of our Congress apparently bought off by China. Former high-ranking members of Congress, now lobbyists, bought off by China. And what are we doing? Well, we developed a bioweapon apparently between the U.S. and China, and now we're giving that bioweapon to our military. We're shooting our military up with a bioweapon that's making them sick, as Attorney Tom Renz with his whistleblower doctors inside the DOD have come out and said. We got a massive increase in cancer, neurological problems, miscarriages, myocarditis, heart inflammation. Wow, so China and Russia, or China and some America's enemies, foreign and domestic, are working together to make our military sick. At the same time, we have them pouring over our border, and Iran and China and Russia all threatening us. Huh! All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. So, as I said before the break, and we've got Karen Kingston coming up, and we've got Peter Pry coming up. So, as I was saying before the break, we've got, let's just go back to the headlines. Iran pushes to increase ballistic missile range to cover Europe. Chinese ambassador says war likely with the U.S. if Taiwan continues toward independence. U.S. officer has seen the simulation drills going on to attack Iran, Israel doing a preemptive strike. We have Russia, you know, willing to go to war over Ukraine because they don't want NATO moving into Ukraine. And you, and as we've explained with Dr. Pry, they don't want NATO and America and our allies in NATO moving in that close with military. They want a little buffer there. So they don't want us fooling around in Ukraine. We're going to go to an audio clip of Dr. Pry, how Putin could be willing to go to war, including nuclear war. And is that what puppet Biden has been put there to do? To make sure America goes to war and our enemies destroy us. Remember, Iran, China, and Russia are all in military exercises together. They're all in military alliances. Remember, Russia and China had Vostok 18, the largest military exercise in world history, it said. Practice bombing what? NATO. Nuclear bombing on NATO countries and America. And now, we had last night, this author, Todd Benzman, on my TV show last night, report, ICE releases border crossing terrorist suspect from Venezuela despite FBI recommendation. A Lebanon-born Venezuelan on the FBI's terrorism watch list due to highly derogatory information is free in Michigan. Now, this was quite a report because normally this kind of stuff doesn't apparently go on. Why would someone want this guy free? Are we sabotaging ourselves? Are people inside our own government sabotaging our government? Remember our friend Phil Haney, who was, I think, murdered? And by the way, I guess the FBI has now finished their investigation and turned it over to the Sheriff's Department in California. And apparently they're about ready to release their findings. Well, this will be interesting. Took them long enough. That's funny. They found out who did it and why they did it when it came to the bombing of Nashville on Christmas a year ago. In 24 hours, they figured that one out. It's taken these guys 2 years to figure out what's going on with Phil Haney. Well, that's interesting. So we'll report what they declare their findings to be, and then we'll comment. But remember our friend Phil Haney, See Something, Say Nothing was his name of his book. See Something, Say Nothing. What was he trying to do? Stop jihadis from coming into America. What'd they do to him? Prosecuted him with a grand jury, trying to throw him in jail for violating the civil liberties of foreigners overseas, really. So we know we have people inside our government that knowingly let bad guys, jihadis, come into the country. Why? They may have been bought off, paid off by some of these countries with their foundations and different things. Others, they're enemies. Enemies, foreign and domestic, working in concert together. So this would not be the first time our government knowingly lets terrorists in and lets them roam around. So what's interesting, however, is that this guy is tied back, reportedly he's tied back to Hezbollah. Now look at what Todd Benzman writes. Iran and its Lebanon-based proxy, the U.S.-designated terrorist organization Hezbollah, maintain deep ties with Venezuela's central government. Through the nation's wealthy Lebanese diaspora, the Iran-Hezbollah presence inside Venezuela, working with Lebanese clan structures, dates to when the late leftist dictator Hugo Chavez took power in 1999 and appointed many Venezuelan-born Lebanese to powerful cabinet posts, including offices of immigration, foreign trade, and tourism. The presence and influence backed in recent years by Russia continued after Chavez died to present present-day regime of Nicolas Maduro. And then he says the executive director of the Center for a Secure and Free Society with contacts inside Venezuela reports extensively about how Iran, listen now, Iran and Hezbollah work closely with the Maduro regime, the Venezuelan government, building transnational organized crime, human smuggling and financial networks throughout South America and into the United States. He told CIS that American and Israeli intelligence services have long known that Iran, Hezbollah, and Venezuela's Lebanese government officials provide these foreign operatives with elaborate state-sponsored cover identities and access to its state-run airline and banking systems, enabling them to move freely in the Western Hemisphere. The state-issued fake identities have allowed terrorist operatives to travel all over the region and world, developing illicit businesses, and listen now, listen, and building terrorism capability without the true origins and identities of these operatives being known. Quote, I've examined a couple dozen cases of individuals who got the full suite of records, enabling establishment of identities, new birth certificates, passports, banking, and property all get put under these names so that that person now has a document ledger saying they were born in Venezuela. Clandestine agents of Hezbollah's notorious Unit 910 are periodically uncovered. Listen now, uncovered where? Inside the United States. Hezbollah is what? Iran, folks. As I have extensively reported in the Detroit area, Todd's reported on that. But he said his organization has uncovered links between the major smuggling organizations that is moving significant numbers of Venezuelans right now and the state-run airline that most often flies the migrants into Guatemala or Mexico for their journey into the United States. So are we seeing a bunch of Venezuelans coming to the United States who really are tied back to Iran? And Iran is threatening what? Terror strikes on the U.S. if we don't arrest President Trump and prosecute him for the death of the general, Iranian General Soleimani. And now we have Iran threatening America. We have China saying war is likely. We have Russia willing to go to war, maybe even nuclear war. And the, interesting, they're all in military alliance. And China developed bioweapons with U.S., traitors inside the U.S., and now we're injecting them in our troops, and our troops are getting sick as dogs at a time when we got three actors acting up. Oh, wait a minute, I need to add another actor that's acting up. North Korea. North Korea. They're shooting off more missiles. They just shot off another really long-range missile the other day. Huh! So now we've got to deal with North Korea, Iran, China, Russia, and our military is sick as dogs. A lot of them are going to die, sorry to say it, but a lot of them will be dead in the next 3 years. And if they're not dead, they're going to be so sick that they can't fight. So we're injecting a bioweapon into our military that was developed in conjunction with China. I believe all the evidence shows this. People who are compromised by China. And what do you think is going to happen when the guy in the White House who hates America, who is bought and paid for by the enemies of America, I believe, don't you see this is a great setup, a gigantic Manchurian setup? And what are we going to do if North Korea and China and Russia and Iran all start acting up? Or they are acting up, but it gets out of hand. What are we going to do? We can't fight a multi-theater front war. What are we going to do when they start letting terrorist attacks off in the U.S.? Because Venezuelans, who are really Iranians, tied back to Iran, Hezbollah, are spilling over the border under fake passports and names, and they're letting off terrorist attacks in the homeland. Now, you guys could say this is all a lot of bluster, but I'm telling you, we better be realist and understand the way our enemies think. So, with that, before we go to Karen, let's go to an audio. Let's go to an audio with Peter Pry. I got to make sure I got the speaker set right. External headphones. I think this is right, Logan. Logan might have to come back in here and help me here. Is this going to work, Logan? Yeah, it's going to work. Look at that. Your old man figured it out. All right, so let me back up the audio with Peter Pry. This is about a 15-minute report, brand new report, recorded yesterday with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, former CIA officer. Then we'll go to an update with some information from Karen Kingston. But here's our report from Dr. Peter Vincent Pry for today. I'll have to interrupt it for a break and come back. Here we go.
Now, Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Those who've been listening to the show know that. So the U.S. has no obligation to defend Ukraine from impending invasion by Russia. Those of you who have been listening to the show know that, too. Nonetheless, President Biden is airlifting anti-tank missiles, ammunition, and other lethal military aid to Ukraine on an emergency basis. I have argued against this. I don't even think we should be airlifting military aid to Ukraine because it could provoke the very invasion of Ukraine that the Biden administration wants to avoid. And why are we so obsessed with Ukrainian sovereignty anyway? Ukraine is basically a corrupt nation. There are no major U.S. national security interest involved in Ukraine. Not one American should die for Ukraine, and the United States should certainly not get in a nuclear war over Ukraine. Now, President Biden has also approved suspending prohibition on NATO members from exporting U.S.-supplied military equipment to other countries. Let me expand upon that. You know, the U.S. has had a law or a policy that when we sell our military equipment to our NATO allies, they're not supposed to give it to anybody else, you know, because we don't want our military equipment then being sold to bad guy countries like Iran or even to Russia. But Biden has suspended that prohibition so that the NATO members can arm Ukraine. And now Britain, Poland, the Baltic states, and other NATO members are rushing military aid to Ukraine. NATO arms flowing into Ukraine to beef up their military is supposed to deter a Russian invasion, or so President Biden hopes. But surging U.S. Western military aid to Ukraine could have just the opposite effect, provoking Russian invasion. Moscow may misinterpret military aid to Ukraine as confirming their fears that the West intends to promote Ukraine from the Partnership for Peace, which is an interim step toward NATO membership, to full NATO membership. You know, this whole crisis got started because NATO, unwisely, years ago, during the Clinton administrations and then mostly during the George W. Bush administration, decided to expand NATO eastward. And so now today, the former Warsaw Pact countries, most of them, you know, are members of NATO. And the United States is obliged to protect them by conventional means and by nuclear means. NATO is extremely popular with former Soviet territories. And to make them happy, NATO established a organization called Partnership for Peace, you know, which they perceive and which is, in fact, sort of an interim step. And Ukraine belongs to the Partnership for Peace. So Russia, the admission of Ukraine to the Partnership for Peace and the fact that we were expanding NATO and including other East European countries and former members of the Warsaw Pact, and even the former territories of the Soviet Union, the Baltic states, for example, used to belong to the USSR. Now they're independent countries and members of NATO. This raised suspicions in Moscow that we were going to include Ukraine in NATO. And the Kremlin has often declared it will oppose Ukrainian admittance to NATO using all means necessary, including nuclear weapons. And I experienced this personally. You know, Moscow has been loud and clear about its nuclear threats against admission of Ukraine to NATO, to U.S. officials high and low. When I was a young man, back in, I think it was 1998, and I was on the House Armed Services Committee professional staff, one of my responsibilities, I had the portfolio for NATO enlargement. And the Congress sent me to all of the NATO, all of the former Warsaw Pact states, all the East European countries that wanted to join NATO.
And we'll find out when we come back what he discovered and what he recommended and how what he and his congressional boss, well, what they thought would happen, it's happening. All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. I have a one-hour interview coming up with General Michael Flynn. 1 hour. He's graciously agreed to 1 hour. Can you imagine the questions I have for him related to all this going on a global scale? It's going to be a fascinating 1 hour. I'll let you know when it's out and available for you to watch. But right now, let's go back before we go to Karen Kingston, the former Pfizer employee, something she saw down on the border I wanted her to tell you guys about. Let's go back to the recording from yesterday. I pulled some of it from my radio show that I produced with for Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, former CIA officer, an analyst and expert on military and nuclear weapons and geopolitics, and he worked on Capitol Hill. And back in 98, I think he said, he was asked to visit a bunch of the NATO nations for Congress and then report back. Let's listen to the rest of this.
And I advised Congress and the late great chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Floyd Spence, not to enlarge NATO, that it was not in U.S. interests to enlarge NATO. I said, if you wanted to get in a new Cold War with Russia at some point in the future, go ahead and expand NATO to the east, because they will regard that as a threat. And these NATO countries that we were bringing in, these East European countries, they're militarily weak, they're economically weak, they're not going to be able to defend themselves against Russia ever. So we're going to be obliged to defend them, and we can't defend them by any conventional forces. We don't have enough military power to project forces into Eastern Europe. The only way we can defend them is with nuclear forces, through the nuclear deterrent. And that's just common sense. You don't even have to be a military strategist to realize that. Back in the Cold War, when the European NATO member states were much stronger militarily, and when the United States was much stronger in terms of its conventional forces, back in those days, we were hoping we could defend Western Europe, just Western Europe. We were postured for a defensive war, and even in that defensive war, because of the great conventional advantages, the great advantages that Russia had in its conventional forces, part of our plan was to defend Western Europe with tactical nuclear weapons. We would probably have to escalate to tactical nuclear weapons. Now, today, with a European NATO that is much weaker, and we have withdrawn most of our forces from Western Europe, we only have like 100 main battle tanks left that have been reintroduced. Obama took all the main battle tanks out of Europe, and now Trump started reintroducing them. But we really only got about 100 main battle tanks in Europe. Germany has gone from having thousands of tanks to having only 440 tanks. Russia has got 20,000 tanks, to just give you one measure, 20,000 tanks. And by our own calculations, Russia can overrun Ukraine and the frontline NATO states in a few days. And we would have to resort to tactical nuclear weapons to stop that. So I was against NATO enlargement. I don't see how it's in America's interests to risk the destruction of the United States in a nuclear war for the sovereignty of countries like Latvia and Estonia and Lithuania. Unfortunately, and Chairman Spence agreed with me. He agreed with me. He was the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. But I remember him saying, Peter, unfortunately, there's so much political momentum behind expanding NATO to the east that we can't stop it. It's too late to stop it. And he turned out to be right. And here we are. We're in this situation on a verge of a war, possibly a nuclear war with Russia. As I said, the Kremlin has often declared it will oppose Ukrainian admittance to NATO using all means necessary, including nuclear weapons. Ukraine, why? It's because Ukraine is a vital strategic interest to Russia. Ukraine is a vital strategic interest to Russia for a host of reasons, not least because Ukraine is a buffer providing strategic depth between Moscow and NATO. If Ukraine enters NATO, the U.S.-led alliance will be only 300 miles from Moscow, which is easy striking distance. 300 miles is easy striking distance for a surprise attack by missiles, aircraft, and tank armies. Now, you and I know that NATO and the United States don't have any plans to attack Russia, but Russia has had a long and bloody history of being invaded, and they are paranoid. They have a strategic culture of paranoia. Of course, Russia has been an aggressor at least as often as it has been a victim. The Russian Empire and the Soviet Union are both red with the blood of conquered nations and oppression of their own people. Consequently, Moscow's worldview is one of endless paranoia, and threats are everywhere. Now, Ukraine is of no vital strategic interest to the West. The U.S. and its allies, as I said, have no intention of invading Russia. But unfortunately, just as the Russians are paranoid, about threats, the West, our strategic culture, is one of what I call dysfunctional optimism. We fail to see threats. We fail fail to understand that other countries can see us as threats. We think of ourselves as the good guys, and we are, and we don't do Pearl Harbors, and we don't do nuclear Pearl Harbors. But the other side, especially paranoid states like Russia, don't understand that. So the West's idealistic defense of Ukraine's sovereignty is misinterpreted by a suspicious Kremlin that NATO expansion eastward will include Ukraine and will include other former Soviet territories belonging to NATO's Partnership for Peace. And Moscow sees this as part of a Western plot to destroy Russia. Russia doesn't believe us that we're not going to bring Ukraine into NATO. In fact, we haven't promised not to do that. You know, we have basically said, if we want to bring Ukraine into the NATO in the future, we will. That's the official position of European NATO, General Stoltenberg, who's the head of the military of NATO. And that's basically the position of the Biden administration. It may be that another less palatable reason the Biden administration wants to defend Ukrainian sovereignty, as I mentioned in our last show, is because Biden has been bribed. You know, millions of dollars have gone to Hunter Biden from Ukraine, Ukrainian business interests. And they're not paying that money really for business interests. You know, they expect to get something out of the bribe. Biden was then the vice president when these bribes were given. The president now, you know, but his credibility, his ability to continue to get corrupt bribes from other nations in the world probably depends a lot on what he will do with Ukraine. Here's another scenario. If Russia plans to invade Ukraine and neighboring NATO states, knowing this could provoke NATO's use of tactical nuclear weapons, Russia may make a preemptive nuclear strike on the European NATO bunkers where tactical nuclear weapons are stored. So you see how these scenarios, by arming Ukraine, we're risking a chain of expanding scenarios that could lead us into a nuclear war with Ukraine. Here's the next scenario. A Russian preemptive strike on European NATO tactical nuclear weapons would result in confrontation with U.S. strategic nuclear forces and a possible homeland-to-homeland exchange. Knowing this, knowing that if Russia strikes the tactical nuclear weapons in European NATO, Russia may make a disarming preemptive strike against all tactical and strategic nuclear forces in the United States and European NATO. You know, general staffs tend to be very conservative. And when they look at the geostrategic chessboard and say to themselves, well, if I make this move, the adversary is going to make that move. So what can I do to stop him from making that move or to defeat that move he's going to make? And basically what I'm doing is leading you through this chess game, this nuclear chess game over Ukraine, where it could go from a conflict between just Russia and Ukraine, expanding to include the frontline NATO states, then expanding to include Russian nuclear strikes on NATO tactical nuclear weapons, because Russia would fear or calculate that, you know, I can't afford to let the Europeans and Americans make tactical nuclear strikes on my forces if I expect to win. And finally, well, if I'm going to make strikes on American and NATO tactical nuclear forces in Europe, you know, they may respond with strategic nuclear forces against me. And I've developed the capability to destroy all or most U.S. strategic nuclear forces. So I'm going to begin the war, you know, with a mass nuclear strike against the American homeland, not to kill the people by the millions, but to do a surgical nuclear strike against missile silos, bomber bases, ballistic missile submarine bases. Sure. You know, it might kill a small fraction of the American population, probably much less than 1% of the population. But I will win the war. I will win World War III, and he will be much less capable of making any kind of a nuclear strike against me. And here's the last scenario. Since Russia and China are allies and have for years practiced conventional and nuclear forces exercises together, if Russia invades Ukraine, Beijing may simultaneously annex Taiwan and the South China Sea. The two dictatorships could coordinate and expand their aggression to achieve a final solution to all issues between East and West. In other words, the war could expand to a World War III, not just against us and Russia, but against us, Russia, and China, and their allies, which would include North Korea and Iran. Now, Russia and China hope to avoid nuclear apocalypse using EMP and cyber warfare to black out adversary electric grids, paralyze adversary military forces. The allure of a swift, relatively bloodless victory through electronic warfare makes aggression more likely. The good news about that is that it would avoid, if it succeeds, if Russia and China succeed at winning an EMP cyber war against the United States, which I think is likely, it would avoid them having having to execute a nuclear war. But once you cross that threshold, you know, into any kind of a large-scale war, EMP, cyber, or whatever, you know, you're risking the escalation to the nuclear level. And who knows, even if they win, even if they paralyze, even if they succeed in blacking out the United States and our NATO allies, they just might say, this is our opportunity to dominate the world. We are in domination of the world because we've defeated our adversaries. But I don't want them to come back. I need to implement a final solution against these countries. And that could be the occupation of the countries or their actual annihilation, you know, to ensure that Russia and China remain the permanent rulers of the world. That is, all of that could come out. All of that could come out. I'm not saying it's likely, but all of that could come out as a consequence of a war in Ukraine. All of that could result as a consequence of Biden's sending arms to Ukraine. President Biden should heed former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's recent warning that the U.S. needs, quote, a multi-billion dollar program to build national EMP preparedness, to harden our electric grid, which will protect our military assets, infrastructure, businesses, and people. War can be avoided if President Biden promises NATO will not expand further eastward, which is sensible. Americans should not die for Ukraine or Kazakhstan.
Wow. Very powerful, very succinct. Pulled that from his 30-minute show, put it together for you to get you a quick, brief overview of what is going on. And I think with the commentary leading up to that point, you realize how dangerous we're living in the times are when you realize what is going on with Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, Venezuela, our enemies being all down in Central America, South America, and then they're pouring over the border. And then we've got the enemies, domestic enemies, that are in concert with these people, paid off by these people, blackmailed by these people, and now injecting our military with a bioweapon at a time when we need our military ready to fight and defend the homeland. They're going to be sick as dogs and dead. Joining me now is former Pfizer employee, Karen Kingston. Karen, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brannon. I agree with you 100%, and most of America doesn't realize how vulnerable we are, and specifically how vulnerable we are at the southern border. I was just down in McAllen, Texas, and I just can't believe our current administration is not only partaking in this atrocity of having an open border, which allows for the sale of women and children into sex trafficking, enslavement, organ harvesting, and just execution for other reasons. But also the Mexican drug cartel has an army that the Mexican government in and of itself can't even stand up to. And the reports that I got from Christy Hutchinson, Mike Miller, and some others down there is, you know, there is about half the people coming over are military-aged men that are, you know, trained or at least have a lifestyle of killing. So we are in grave threat.
And then you add the damage the bioweapon shot is doing to our military, which I'll have you comment on when we come back, as well as what you saw in the airport. I want you to tell our audience what you told me today. Karen Kingston, former Pfizer employee. We won't take calls today. I want to get her report and try to slip a few more news reports in here myself. We'll be right back after this break. Thanks for watching. All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com, worldviewradio.com. Karen Kingston joins me. She's a former Pfizer employee and expert on so many of the issues related to vaccinations, vaccines, the FDA, drugs, the patents. So you were telling me today on the phone what you saw in the airport. Tell us where you were, what airport you were in, and what you saw, Karen.
Sure. I was in the McAllen Airport on Monday, late morning, just before the afternoon, flying back from an event that we had down at the border. Tom Homan was there, Christy Hutchinson, and General Flynn, obviously, was down there as well. And when I was flying back, now, I didn't actually go down to the border because I'm just the type of person where I know what I was going to see. And I get it would bother me too much to actually see it. I did look at some videos and images, but when I went to the airport just to leave to return to Southern California, there were a number. I saw three specific adults who were carrying toddler-aged children, ages between the ages of 2 and 4. Each had one child, and the child was completely drugged, like a rag doll, completely drugged, and the adults had a tag around their neck with a plastic sleeve in it with paperwork in it, and then just a garbage bag of clothing. So it was obvious that these children were not these adults' children, and the adults were immigrants, you know, illegal immigrants. They did not speak English, and I saw Mike Miller had shown me videos of what he had taken when he went down to the border just a couple days ago, and he went into one of the facilities. And the children, which I would say range from, the images he showed me range from probably 10 months to maybe 3.5 years, they were lying on kind of what would look like a yoga mat on a concrete floor, completely drugged. They were all just lined up. They almost looked like dead bodies lined up on the floor. So these children are being either sold into, again, sex trafficking or organ harvesting or some other type of execution, or they're being kidnapped.
So you're very...
Christy Hutchinson, I don't know if you had her on, but she's rescued a number of children. The one story she shared was a 12-year-old girl who had been, due to the test they had done after they had rescued her, she had been raped by 21 men. She was 12 years old. And she returned her to her mother in Guatemala.
Wow. So you're pretty adamant from what you saw, what you heard, and the experts you were talking to, that many of these children, they are not with their parents are legal guardians.
I'm a mother. I know when a parent is with their child. And there were three adults there carrying around, like I said, either between the ages of 2 and maybe almost 4, because the children looked smaller than my son was, I guess. But they were completely drugged. No, these are not their children. These are not their children. And they were carrying them like, you know, not like you carry a 3-year-old at the airport. And they were completely drugged. There was no sign of movement, nothing.
Hmm. All right, that's great.
And nobody's doing anything. There's a police at the airport, you know, and security, and they actually were harassing Christy Hutchinson, who's protecting our border, funding it with her own money, sending men down there. They were harassing her and her security, and they didn't want to let them on the plane, but they were letting these illegal immigrants walk in with no ID, just a tag and some paperwork, carrying a child that's drugged, a baby that's drugged, that's not their child, onto a plane.
Good grief. All right, that's distressing. Let's switch topics here real quick in the remaining moments. We have an article this week by Colonel Lawrence Sullen. He is retired U.S. Army Reserve colonel and veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq, and he held a civilian career in international business and medical research. He has an article we have over at Worldview Report entitled, China's military may be making a new human-infecting coronavirus deadlier than COVID-19. Now, this is all when, I guess, what, in 2 days the Olympics are supposed to start? So isn't this an interesting time to have the world gathering and then spread a virus again? I don't know. I'm just asking a question. But China caused the COVID-19 pandemic, writes Colonel Sullen, by artificially manipulating the structure of a natural bat coronavirus to make it infectious to humans. It appears that China is now repeating that process with a far deadlier coronavirus. There's much concern expressed in the international media recently about a potentially more transmissible and more lethal coronavirus called NeoCoV, described in a January 25, 2022 scientific article published by the Chinese scientists from Wuhan University. NeoCoV is a member of a group of coronaviruses, one of which is which in 2012 caused Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, outbreak that killed 34% of the approximately 2,500 people it infected. According to the Chinese authors, NeoCoV binds not just to the bat DPP4 receptor found in most MERS coronaviruses, but also weakly binds to the ACE2, which is the human receptor for the highly transmissible COVID-19 virus. The Chinese scientists, at least one of which has extensive links to China's People's Liberation Army, then proceeded to genetically engineer NeoCoV-2 to increase its ability to infect humans. Like the laboratory creation of COVID-19, Chinese scientists have again taken a coronavirus found in nature in an artificially manipulated structure to infect humans, but now with a virus capable of producing a 34% lethal rate compared to 1.6 for COVID-19. Would you comment on this, please, Karen?
I haven't seen the virus, but if it's similar to MERS, I mean, I know this sounds strange because infectivity is not transmissibility. So it sounds like they would do an attack, I guess, on those who are attending the Olympics. And hope for a 34%. Meaning the Chinese Communist Party would probably hope for a 34% mortality rate. But keep in mind that MERS and SARS-CoV-2 both killed under 10,000 people. So even though a virus can be highly deadly, it doesn't necessarily mean it's highly transmissible. Hmm. So that's what I would comment on. But it would be and keep in mind SARS-CoV-2. Alleged, what we're calling SARS-CoV-2, was not transmissible, Brandon. We've gone over this now, and the evidence is there. When it first broke out in Wuhan, there were 13 cases hospitalized, not one case of human-to-human transmission in over 600 exposures. We now know there's a document on the FDA website. It's about 80 pages long. I just started going through it. Maybe I should come on your show and go through it. They said the PCR test was never to test for SARS-CoV-2 because they had no way to test for it because they didn't know how to test for the virus, allegedly. They were testing for the flu. Hmm. So all these people who thought they were dying from coronavirus or said to have died from coronavirus were not. They had probably a bad cold or the flu.
All right, we're out of time. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brandon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on BCY America.